and I'm crossing my fingers that every bug will be fixed by then, because we don't want the site to go live with something not working correctly. But almost everything is working correctly, and we're almost there. So check the site, kboo.fm, next week, and you will see the brand spanking new KBOO website and mobile app available as well.
The app, though, is available currently, right?
The app is available now, and if you download it now, it will automatically be updated with the new content when the website goes live.
Okay, well, thank you, Janka, for talking to us about all this exciting stuff that's coming up with you guys.
Yeah, and don't forget to like KBOO on Facebook. It's a KBOO Radio, and then also on Twitter and Instagram. Look for KBOO. Now, our website is kboo.fm. Keep checking back. You'll see the new one next week. Thanks, Jenna.
Okay, thanks. Once again, that was Janka Soderberg, KBOO Web and New Media Director. Be sure to check out KBOO's new site at www.kboo.fm starting next Tuesday.
This is KBOO Portland. Up next is Occupy Radio. We go to the Radio Occupy Collective in Santa Barbara and an interview with Abby Martin, former Russia Today show host. First, we have a few important messages for you. The first one being, you hear about new and exciting authors on KBOO nearly every day. Through the Powell's Partner Program, you can contribute to KBOO while shopping for the books you hear about over the air. We earn 7.5% on every dollar you spend at Powell's online. The same goes for books you sell to Powell's, which you can also do on their website. To use KBOO's partner program, go to kboo.fm/Powell's to look for those books today. And now, before we go to Radio Occupy, a few more messages tailored just for you.
A Washington Post investigation revealed that of all fatal shootings by police in 2015, almost one quarter involved a person who was mentally unstable. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on April 4th to hear St. Helens Police Chief Terry Moss discuss how crisis intervention training is changing how police interact with people with mental illness and how police are helping to divert them from incarceration. That's Prison Pipeline, April 4th at 6:30 p.m.
What happens when Oz and Wonderland collide in a twisted brain of a mad composer? A freaking musical, of course. KBOO is proud to present Nick T. Devlin's new musical, Alice Trippin' Sixes. It's a strange and unusual music odyssey. Flying monkeys, scarecrows, jokers, and even midday tokers. Oh, this ain't your normal musical, man. It's a far-out psychedelic trip into the mind of the mad. This is gonna be one wild and crazy musical event. Alice Trippin' Sixes, Thursday, March 31st at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to Radio Occupy. We are produced at KCSB FM in Santa Barbara. We are nonviolent, non-hierarchical, transparent, and committed to ending corporate control of our government. We are dedicated to raising the public's awareness by examining the issues of the Occupy Wall Street movement. The opinions expressed here are those of our guests. Facts are facts, but opinions may not be. No one speaks for the movement.
Mr. President, I can't pay my rent. Think I'll occupy, think I'll pitch a tent.
Welcome to Radio Occupy. I'm here speaking with activist and journalist and artist Abby Martin, who is the founder of Media Roots and former host of Breaking the Set at the Russian Times. And we're going to be talking a little bit about her career, spanning a really interesting period of from Occupy Oakland all the way up to now, currently, as founder of the Media Roots organization, and also with her artwork and her activism. So welcome, Abby, to our show, Radio Occupy Santa Barbara.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Can maybe we start out maybe just talking about how you got started? I mean, you have such a really interesting career. It's so colorful, and you've done so many cool things, and you're all about citizen journalism, which is like my big passion right now, too, especially since I started working here at KCSB. And, yeah, just kind of like what got you started and where you're headed.
Yes, sure. So it really started through anti-war activism when I was freshman and sophomore in college at San Diego. And, you know, San Diego is a really high concentration of military bases. And it was just a very bizarre kind of lead up to war, this fervor of the student body. And I remember the bombing campaign of Iraq, the shock and awe, and people were cheering in the cafeteria. And
You're talking about 2003, the U.S. invasion of Iraq.
Yeah, and I remember just wondering, you know, I hated Bush so much, and I thought that everything was really the Republicans' fault. But then I remember, you know, Nancy Pelosi saying impeachment was off the table, and I was really confused because I was like, this guy's a war criminal. Long story short, I realized that the media was selling the foreign policy narrative, both parties. I mean, it crossed party lines. It was so entrenched. It was this top-down structure that you couldn't blame on just the Democrats or the Republicans. And so that's when I was like, something's very wrong, and it really stems from media. Because if you, it doesn't matter if my issue is war and militarism. If your issue is food, water, organizing, I mean, if you don't have a platform to tell your message, no one will hear it. And then when you start to realize why the media's so messed up, and then you see the systems of control with this top-down conglomerate of, you know, six giant monolithic corporations,
right.
General Electric, Viacom, they all have hidden interests. Not only are they kind of these overlords and overseers of all of these different news stations, but they also have dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of corporate sponsorships, advertisements on those networks. So when you see the media landscape, it's very abysmal. And you immediately realize, okay, there's only so many flyers you can hand out on the street, but if you don't have some sort of generation of your, like a generating force to tell your message, then it's really just falling on deaf ears. So I started my own website because I was kind of just over these like really bad, crappy-looking websites that, you know, the alt news people were putting together. And as an artist, I wanted to make it very light and appealing and putting it back to that kind of the foundation of what I feel media should be, which is a citizen-based truth-telling organization from the ground up.
Sure.
And so I started Media Roots, which initially started as just a hub of all the censored information that I'd been seeing. I got very inspired by Project Censored, ended up linking up with them.
Wow.
And for people who don't know Project Censored, that is the largest student-based research organization in the country.
Wow.
Every year they publish an annual book of the top 25 censored stories from the previous year. And it's just an incredible body of professors and students just completely selfless doing this.
And that's at Sonoma State University, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sonoma State University.
Yeah, exactly.
Project Censored. Yeah, that's been long been a favorite of one of my favorites.
Amazing. Yeah, this is an incredible organization. And so I got on the board of that, and I came back to Oakland thinking that Oakland was going to kind of be a more politically active place in San Diego. In a lot of senses, it is.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a lot of people in the Bay Area, you know, don't hand me another flyer, I've been around this all my life kind of attitude, where who are you to tell me, you know, we grew up in, you know, our parents grew up here in the 60s, we know. But then there's this kind of apathy as well, and a lot of people who don't understand how the issues connect. So, you know, a lot of people there are obviously, you know, concerned about environmentalism, or they're vegan, or they compost, but they don't understand how these things are all systemic in the system, and you know, and they all support Obama and stuff. So that's a whole nother battle.
I didn't. Okay. I always thought Oakland was really, you know, the bastion of the Black Panthers.
I'm mostly talking about San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more
Berkeley.
Conservative.
Yeah. San Francisco and Berkeley are really odd. Mm-hmm. Oakland's definitely that raw kind of rebellious spirit still, because of such a large Black contingent who's been brutalized for the past couple decades. And then, of course, the Occupy Oakland stuff happened, and RT, Russia Today, was the only network really legitimizing the Occupy movement, and they were going around giving a voice to the activists. And I was like, I don't understand why this Russian network is doing this, but I don't care, because we need to get the information out there.
Right.
And that's how it all started.
Yeah, so at that time, you were just kind of covering Occupy Oakland, everything that was happening there, independently by yourself.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
you hooked
exactly.
up with...
I was doing it for Media Roots.
Oh, okay. And then for your organization, Media Roots, and then and then from there you ran into Russian Today and started doing stuff for them?
Yeah, so I started just doing interviews with them and letting them know, hey, this is what's going on. And then they offered me a job, and they said, move out to D.C. And I said, no, that sounds terrible. I can't imagine living out there. And then, you know, and I just couldn't pass it up. At the end of the day, you're given an international platform to just kind of rant and rave, which is what I was doing anyway, and bring this really controversial viewpoint to the table that really undercuts this conventional wisdom that we're peddled with on a daily basis. So I was like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And fast forward 3 years, here I am in D.C. Never thought I'd be here.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think of Washington, D.C. as the belly of the beast. It's funny because me and my friends here at Radio Occupy, we call Santa Barbara the belly of the beast, but I've always thought that I think Washington, D.C. is the real belly of the beast.
Well, especially you being close to L.A., I always call D.C. Hollywood for ugly people because it's that same kind of power-hungry, you know, leech mentality, but it's all just kind of Karl Rove-looking doughboys.
That's a great description, yeah. I understand. But so one of the things that I remember reading about was the fact that you covered the Scott Olsen attack when the police hit him in the head with the flashbang grenade or whatever it was. Can you say anything more about like what happened in Oakland? What was like being on ground zero, basically, of Oakland Occupy?
Yeah, it was absolutely horrible. I remember I was in. I was obviously following Day of Rage and Adbuster's call to do the initial Occupy Wall Street in Wall Street. And I remember being in Montana, and I was, like, depressed. I was like, I'm missing the revolution. This is happening. I need to get to New York. Like, this is crazy.
Right.
And then I just was like, okay, before I do that, let me see, like, what's going on in Oakland. And then so about a couple weeks later, I just got involved with the organizing phase of getting our initial Occupy Oakland stuff there and following, okay, so we're going to try to start an Occupy Oakland day where people are going to come out and we're going to try to do this in Frank Ogawa Plaza. And so I went there from day one, and I was just filming everyone, asking why they're doing it. It was all walks of life. I mean, Oakland's incredibly diverse. A lot of just great activists. Their seasoned activists and stuff. And so it was just a really incredible day, very positive, uplifting. And it happened for about 3 weeks where we were out there every day. And I just kept getting footage, and they started building the library and building the first aid kit and, you know, organizing these peaceful marches down to the port and all this. And then lo and behold, one day the helicopters showed up. I mean, no reason. There was no instigation. There was no sort of impetus for the police to raid. It was just what they were doing. And so, I mean, it was very brutal, though, because compared to Occupy Wall Street in New York, it was very peaceful. You know, of course, cops are, like, very in your face there, but they weren't using chemical agents. And, you know, it would have just been police in New York act differently. At least they speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
The police in Oakland, they are like a military. I mean, they come in.
And they're swinging.
They come in guns blazing. I mean, there were about six birds in the sky, spotlights. There was, they raided the entire camp, destroyed it. They did mass arrests. They launched tear gas canisters, flashbang grenades. I mean, this was before really anything happened at all. This was the initial provocation to escalate everything that happened after that.
Right.
So I just went around, and I was trying to find the press officer there because I was like, why did you guys do this? What was there any evacuation order given? How did you just come in here and, you know, you're destroying people's property, and you're also, we have a right to be here. Like, and so I was just trying to kind of narrate this scene, and it was so surreal because it really did feel like you're in Star Wars. There's thousands of these police officers responding to a bunch, like a couple people sleeping in a park.
Right.
So after that, then it was on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then there was giant swaths of activists. I mean, thousands of people in the streets every single day, shutting down the entire downtown area.
Wow.
And I always love it when people are like, you know, first of all, they justify tear gas, which is an internationally banned weapon of war.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. military cannot even use tear gas against ISIS.
Wow.
But they can use it against their own civilians because in the 1993 Chemical Weapons Convention, the U.S. carved out a caveat in that convention to say that they wanted to use tear gas for domestic riot control purposes.
Wow, so they've been playing.
And that's why you see Bahrain and Egypt using it now against their civilians.
Wow.
Because of what the U.S. did. So when people are like, oh, like, they justify this, first of all, cops are donned in riot gear. They're They're designed to deal with riots. Like, if someone's throwing a brick at you, that's what the shield is for. That's what your mask is for. So to use this, like, quote-unquote, less than lethal, they can't say non-lethal because it's killed people many times.
Mm-hmm.
So to use these rounds, that is a provocation. You are instigating a fight. I mean, that is a war. You're battling these people who are unarmed, and they're standing there with signs. So I've always thought that that was something that needs to be called out in question anyway.
Right.
So we're standing there completely peaceful. Everyone's just pleading for the police to not gas us again.
Mm-hmm.
And they did multiple times. And I was standing right next to Scott Olson, who had a Veterans for Peace flag. And, you know, and they just shot that tear gas canister right at his face.
Wow.
And it was a horrifying moment, because if you look at the video footage of that incident, he is getting helped by people,
uh-huh.
and then they target that crowd,
right,
which is actually a crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I remember they threw, as the crowd was gathering and trying to help Scott Olson, they threw flashbang grenades right into the crowd itself, and people were like, you know, had to jump back and couldn't help him because they...
That's like a firework. I mean, you can't throw that in a crowd.
Yeah, it's like me throwing fire into people that are trying to help somebody out.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. So that just went on and on and on, but it comes to a point, and this is the strategy, I think, of the police state in terms of, like, the sophistication evolution of how the police state operates now, is that they just wear you out.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get raided and arrested so many times, you can't afford to continue to post bail. You can't afford to keep, you know, unless you're completely unemployed and homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, how can you afford bail, right?
Right, yeah.
They're, like, stuck in jail. So it's, like, all these people who maybe did have jobs and they were trying to show solidarity, like, they could not, because the police would bring it to a breaking point where they'd get kettled every day and in jail for days and days, and you just, that's how they do it.
Right, yeah. Wow. And also it ties in with what Dave Lindorf said. I interviewed him once about the whole Occupy meltdown as the police raids began and stuff. And he pointed to Occupy Oakland as being where the tide turned, where it became really vicious. When the police raided Occupy Oakland, it was a particular style of military attack that hadn't gone before the other Occupies. And then from that point on, the police repression of Occupy became extremely vicious and extremely repressive and extremely violent. But it started with Occupy Oakland.
And Jean Kwan, the mayor at the time, you know, she was involved in that conference call when people were like, not once again looking at a top-down level. And another problem with Oakland is, as militant and anarchistic as it can be, at that time Obama was still in his first term, and his headquarters were right down the street from Fancagawa Plaza, and there was this kind of whole, like, smash capitalism mindset without linking it to the fact that Obama is the president and that he is perpetuating and, like, funded by bankers, supporting bankers, put all these lobbyists in his cabinet, is perpetuating this horrific domestic policy and foreign policy. So people weren't willing to touch it at that point. It was like they didn't want to connect those things. I remember we were talking to people saying, hey, let's do a massive act of civil disobedience in Obama's headquarters since it's right there. And there was a lot of schisms there. And then it came out later that he was involved and, if not directly ordered, that coordinated crackdown raid across the country when all of them got raided at the same time, and that was kind of like fizzling toward the end of it.
Well, that was when the mayors of the 11 major cities met with the Department of Homeland Security. That's always been the hush-hush thing, but it was the Department of Homeland Security that called out the order, and then it was the beginning of the really violent repression then of Occupy, and it was a real show of power on the part of the state against the people in repressing a grassroots political movement.
Totally.
So, let's pause right here for a public service announcement, and we'll come back, and maybe we can talk next a little bit about what's going on currently with the repressive...
Yeah, absolutely.
The repressive police state, one of my favorite subjects.
I take no prisoners, you call it aggressive, but all I see is lies coming out of your message. I keep it audacious, speaking the facts. We break the paradigm with truth and tact. The people don't need to be fed propaganda, spoon-fed fabrications and slander. What we need is to question more and to keep it authentic, real and raw. My simple mission is to change the globe. I'ma do it with this passion and fire untold. These words are hard-hitting, you're watching your neck, but you need to tune in, cause we're breaking the set. See, we're breaking the set. We're questioning more. We're on the front lines of a media war. We're breaking the set. We're challenging views. Don't take it for granted that your news is truth.
All right, we're back with Radio Occupy, and I'm speaking with Abby Martin, and she's, again, the host of Russian, or of Breaking the Set at Russian Times.
Former host,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting that. But anyhow, yeah, so we were talking about Occupy Oakland, and I was wanting to maybe roll that into a little bit about what's going on right now in Baltimore, because it's looking, again, like this incredible police state repression of a grassroots people's response and a grassroots movement, because Black Lives Matter has been going on now for at least almost a year. So this is a continuation, I see it, of Black Lives Matter, and people just, you know, trying to express their opinions and fight back mm-hmm. against the brutal police, military police repression of just average American citizens.
It's really interesting, because when the Oakland stuff happened, I think people were shocked that it turned into kind of a police warfare, like Mad Max scenario, because at first it was just, hey, we're really frustrated with the corruption in Wall Street.
Right.
It was like, hey, reinstate Glass-Steagall. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, my God, we're living in a police state. Like, what happened?
Yeah, you know? We're getting busted by the police and they're coming in with
full-on. It was like a really bizarre kind of switching of this narrative and perception of, okay, wow, we actually have a serious problem here. And then fast forward to today, where now it's just,
it's playing out
totally
in Baltimore.
Out in the open.
It's playing out in Ferguson. It's playing out in Anaheim. It's playing out in Oxnard. I mean, there's just been so many situations now of just the brutal police repression, particularly of communities of color, but also homeless people, homeless white people. In New Mexico, there's been investigations of the killings of homeless people there, and so it's on and on and on. But now Baltimore seems to be a bigger case than has gone before. It looks like it's even maybe bigger in some ways than Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the Black Lives Matter movement is extremely important, and people who claim that we're living in a post-racial society are moronic. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but slavery ended not too long ago. Black people only got the right to vote few decades ago. I mean,
right.
Wake up.
Right.
There is an institutionalized system of systemic injustice
right.
towards the Black community in this country. And if you do not understand that, then you have a serious problem. You need to look at yourself in the mirror mm-hmm. and ask yourself, why are you so privileged in your mind, not understanding how people are born disproportionately underprivileged in this country? It's absolutely astounding. And I get really angry because I hear it all the time. I'm encountering people's reactions, putting information out there, and it's astoundingly ignorant.
Yeah.
And it's all just, it really is predominantly white people who don't understand, well, look at their thugs, they're animals. It's like, first of all, stop using these overtly racist terms to talk about black people. Second of all, until you care as much about white people looting billions of dollars, then we have a serious problem on our hands.
Right, exactly. Now, who are the real thugs here? You know, a few people rioting in Baltimore because the police are breaking people's spines, or the idiots on Wall Street that just looted the whole country to the tune of trillions of dollars.
Cost
people their homes,
trillions,
their livelihoods, their pensions, and they looted the country scot-free. You know, not one of them has gone to prison.
But a couple windows broken, and wow, it's Armageddon, you know,
right.
And it's just so amazing. I mean, here we are, and once again, as Martin Luther King said, like, who am I to criticize the rioting? That is the voice of the unheard.
Right.
For example, the fact that there was 7 days straight of tens of thousands of people out in the streets completely peacefully. Where was the media?
Right.
Where was the
exactly.
attention on Baltimore? So I'm sorry, but yeah, a couple windows are broken, buildings burned down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, who's paying attention?
Mm-hmm.
Now what are we talking about? So you have to understand that I'm not going to sit here as a privileged white woman and say this is the tactics that should be applied, this is how the Black Lives Matter movement should be acting. I'm going to show solidarity and however I can with my white privilege and say, like, I support your movement and any way that I can
right.
without infringing on some sort of, like, moral imposition on how it's being carried out, because I understand that if I'm being overly militarized, overly policed, overly jailed, then that's just that these are going to be generational struggles that I can never understand or claim to.
Mm-hmm.
But the police state there, it's incredible. I just saw this one girl talking about, you know, let's not forget why this happened. Let's not forget about Freddie Gray. And Freddie Gray is actually a very damning case because, sure, Kelly Thomas was another horrific, I mean, it's even hard to talk about, you know, this poor homeless guy who was beat up for 30 minutes on camera. Right. Then you have, you know, Tamir Rice. You have all these things that are, or the Mike Brown thing. His actual shooting death wasn't on camera. Mm-hmm. Freddie Gray... It's almost easier for cops to lie when it's like they killed someone with a bullet. You know, oh, I thought he had a gun, and he pulled for his waistband. This is a really, really disturbing indication of kind of how cops can operate in this type of kind of like gang mentality.
Right.
That they can actually arrest a person for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Then that something happens between when they arrest him, and he has clearly like a visibly a broken leg. He's screaming in agony.
Mm-hmm.
And his spine gets crushed from the point where they arrest him to 5 minutes later in the police caravan.
Right.
It's almost like an episode of The X-Files where it's like, okay, we open the police caravan. All of a sudden, his spine was crushed. Oh, what happened?
Yeah.
Did an alien come down? I mean, the fact that the police commissioner is saying, oh, we don't know. Like, arrest the cops.
Right.
Arrest the police.
Exactly.
This was a murder.
Mm-hmm.
People have told me, oh, like, you don't know. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I guess he broke his own spine, didn't he?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Because that's easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, but if you're asking what can be done, one clear-cut demand, arrest the officers that murdered Freddie Gray and stop extrajudicially assassinating black people in the streets that are unarmed.
Exactly.
That's what we need to stop doing.
Yep.
And wow, what will change if that happens? And there's just kind of this rampant unaccountability and complete ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And we always hear, where are the moderate Muslims every time there's a terrorist attack, even though there's thousands out there denouncing it? Where are the moderate police? Where are the moderate police coming out and saying, we don't stand for this. This does not speak for our job.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they?
Yeah.
I don't see them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sorry, but all of them are implicated until there's some sort of massive overhaul
of the
police system.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, to me, it's what I find scary about the whole thing is that every time this happens and the police walk away scot-free, except for the one case in North Carolina, now I think that police officer did get prosecuted.
Right.
But for the most part, Mike Brown, Tamir Rice, Andy Lopez, Manuel Diaz, Michael Brown... Now Freddie Gray and Eric Garner. Every single time the cops are walking away scot-free, so that indicates to me that they're sending us a message, basically. The police state is telling us that if we want to kill you and do an extrajudicial public execution of you because we don't like you for whatever reason, then we'll do that and we'll do it with impunity. Nothing is there. There's no court system or law of the land that's going to stop us from committing these public executions. And to me, that's frightening.
Oh, it's terrifying. And then you have, it even goes beyond this kind of like coat of arms. Like, you know, I'm 100% for unions, but the police union is bat SH, you know, blank T. But I mean, it's amazing. And yes, I mean, the Eric Garner case, I think, really, really laid bare the grand jury fraud, too. I had no idea these grand jury, like, systems were so fake, too.
Yes. Well, the court systems now are so fraudulent. I mean, you know, look at the foreclosure. Well, I've dealt with foreclosure issues here in California. I mean, it's just, it's horrific now to try to deal with anything through the legal system. I mean, your chances of getting justice meted out is almost next to zero. And especially when it comes to these kinds of issues, these police brutality issues, over and over and over again, we see that the grand jury is in the pocket of the DA, and the DA is in the pocket of the police. So over and over again, the police walk scot-free.
Yeah, and it's not just about cameras. You know, Hillary Clinton's out there going, ah, the cops need cameras. That's great. That's all well and good. But that is not going to stop this. There needs to be a massive systemic change here. And it needs to be from the top down. I mean, let's be honest here. Cops can turn off their cameras. This has happened multiple times. There's a woman in New Orleans, a female police officer, I think, who turned off her body camera before shooting a guy in the face.
Right.
So I just malfunctioned, you know. I mean, we cannot trust police to be accountable to themselves.
Right. Exactly.
And also, even if it is on camera, like the Eric Garner thing, that's not That's no indication that a police officer will be prosecuted.
Right.
Johannes Meserle, you brought up the guy who actually did get prosecuted because it was, like, so blatant. I mean, he's shooting a guy, running away and killing him. That was insane.
Right.
And then Johannes Meserle, the Fruitvale police guy who shot Oscar Grant in the face. This is, like, kind of at the cusp of all this stuff.
Right.
Before Occupy Oakland and stuff. I mean, he only got a couple months in prison just because of the pressure the community was putting on him. He would have gotten away scot-free. He's now out. He's back on the force.
Right, yeah.
So that was on camera.
Right.
That was on camera. So cameras are great, and we need to scare cops. It's our right. We need to be filming cops everywhere, but that is not the solution here.
Right, yeah. Well, it's the system, you know. It's like one of the things that people are not really seeing that makes what's happening right now with the Black Lives Matter movement and the whole new civil rights movement is that we've seen a complete gutting of the 1965 Civil Rights Voting Rights Act legislation that was to protect the black right to vote. That's been gutted now. That happened last year in the Supreme Court. So that's been overturned, basically. We've seen basically the overturning of affirmative action. We've seen all these different things, pieces of legislation that have moved through the system, the National Defense Authorization Act, the Patriot Act, all these things that are creating more and more a system of fascism that basically is destroying the lives of everyone out there. I mean, it's an American issue for everyone. And in particular, I think what happens is they target, you know, first off, the low-income communities of color, the most vulnerable populations, to kind of implement the martial law at those levels, because then, you know, we can say, oh, you know, that's their problem. But it's systematic. You know, the whole system right now is imploding under the weight of its own corruption and the weight and the fact that it's no longer a democracy. I mean, that's
very
that's,
well said. Very well said. And you cannot condemn riots without also condemning the system of structural violence against black people in America.
Right.
I mean, because it's being waged in every facet. Like you just said, the evisceration of the Voting Rights Act is one example of how the establishment has undercutted the rights of African Americans in this country.
Right.
I mean, in a quote-unquote post-racial society.
Right.
You know? And look at also, I'm sorry, what were you just going to say?
Yeah, and it's steady. It's a steady erosion of rights.
Mm-hmm.
Rights and privileges just being steadily eroded away.
And let's look really quickly at the landscape of Baltimore. Let's look really quickly at the landscape of Detroit, Oakland. 50% of black people in Freddie Gray's area, unemployed. Foreclosures. Water shutoffs.
Right.
Where the UN has to come over to our country, unprecedented, and appeal to our government to turn on water.
Right. I know.
For the citizens of this country.
Yeah, I'm astounded. Right now in Detroit, Michigan, 30,000 people, mostly low-income blacks, have had their water shut off. That is,
not being without water. I mean, it's amazing. This is a basic human right. This is our human right. And if we are turning away our brothers and sisters in our own country who are dying of thirst and getting diseases because we... But once again, Kathy, once again, the two-tier justice system lays bare, because who isn't getting their water shut off? Giant sports stadiums, corporations who are also delinquent on their bills by tens of thousands of dollars.
Yep.
But you're shutting off a $150 water bill to a black mother who has a baby who needs to have infant formula.
Mm-hmm.
What is she going to do? So this is when we talk about pockets of this kind of destitute, like capitalism,
run amok.
Crisis zones. That's what Chris Hedges calls them. He calls them crisis zones because they are like what capitalism will suck dry and leave to die.
Right.
And we've seen it in the Native American communities already. And that if we want to talk about the forgotten people, that's who's completely forgotten and living in the most
squalor
in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But the black community's next.
Right.
And it's a system that's on full force attack against these people, and it's starting with the homes, it's starting with the water, and and if we don't step up now, then what is this? Then it's not just going to be Detroit that needs saving. If we don't step up now and stand up for our brothers and sisters in Baltimore and Ferguson, we're going to have a serious problem on our hands, because we cannot fight the largest military in the world with violence.
Exactly.
And I'm not even saying the Black Lives Matter movement. I'm just saying we have to really hunker down and organize and strategize about how we can creatively defeat the largest military force in the world.
Yeah.
And change the system.
Right.
And it's going to not be an easy feat, but it's a serious one, and it's a life or death matter.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I see everything headed towards crisis right now. I think Baltimore, the situation in Baltimore, that's just going to grow and grow. We saw it with Trayvon Martin. We saw it now with, you know, again, like I can go through the whole list, but it's just not going away because the justice is not being served. So we have an escalating awareness now of the growing police state. And people are, I think there is starting to be some kind of dawning awareness that, you know, this is going to take some real organizing and some real do or die kind of activism to change this system and to reform it and to make it work again for the people.
Right. So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's good. We live in interesting times, as the Chinese curse
goes. We do. But it's also an amazing time because even though, you know, and I asked myself this, like, wow, has this always been happening? It's like, yes. The answer is yes. Black people have always been dying at the hands of police. I mean, look at, you know, back during the Rodney King beating. Like, this has happened. But now, going back to the camera thing, not that that's the answer, but that is at least bringing this visibility to now where people get it, that this is happening and it's a huge problem. And so it's kind of spreading this consciousness. And that's what the amazing thing about the digital age and this new era of technological advancement, where we can be interconnected with everything and everyone on the planet, where someone gets bombed in Gaza and they're showing solidarity to us in Ferguson. I mean, that is some powerful stuff right there.
Yeah.
That we can have solidarity with all of these movements and understand that the system connects us all.
Right.
And that it's moved beyond just, you know, this kind of like imperial, like, you know, it's moved
imperialism,
so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this globalized struggle now because the system's globalized and it's crushing everyone on the planet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you looked at what happened was in Turkey when the Arab Spring and the people were gathered there initially just to protect a park. I mean, they were just trying to stop a park from being turned into some corporate mega mall thing that they did not want. And so that brought them out, and that was the beginning of the Arab Spring in Turkey back in, I think, 2011.
Exactly, man. It's just about holding down these public spaces
and making it work for the people, you know, taking it back to the people.
Right. And we need to start, you know, and the thing is, these small successes are happening all across the country. You see, like, municipalities or local referendums that are either passing GMO labeling or, you know, repealing the NDAA on a local level. We just saw Tennessee repeal the civil asset forfeiture, where cops can just seize your assets with no penalty.
That's a shakedown.
Are happening.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, these things are happening, and so it's, I don't want to be all doom and gloom and say, like, nothing's changing. It is. It's just that, of course, the media and the politicians won't tell you, and they don't want to tell you about these amazing ecological and technological advancements that unite us and make them obsolete and their structures obsolete, because it's the old guard and they're holding on to control. They know that they can't last. No empire can.
Right, No, you're right.
It's will fall.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, let's pause right here for a public service announcement, and then when we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit more about citizen journalism and the wave of the future.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. The campaign for universal health care for every citizen is growing around the United States. Our local organization, Healthcare for All Oregon, has brought the movement to the stage for an outreach and fundraising mega concert featuring Vicki Stevens and the True Blue Lady Cat, Rosalind Hunters with LaRonda Steele, Terry Robb, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. KBOO will be broadcasting live from the event. Again, that's Healing the Healthcare Blues on Saturday, April 16th from 6 p.m. to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And when I speak, I don't speak as a Democrat or a Republican. I speak as a victim of America's so-called democracy. You and I have never seen democracy. All we've seen is hypocrisy. When we open our eyes today and look around America, we see America not through the eyes of someone who has enjoyed the fruits of Americanism. We see America through the eyes of someone who has been the victim of Americanism. We don't see any American dream. We've experienced only the American nightmare.
Yeah. They claim I hate my country. That's funny though, isn't it? If I truly did, why'd I be the least bit interested in using all my energy to fight for this place? I'd be giving up on any kind of future United States. Would you tell Martin Luther King to love it or leave it? Accept every kind of injustice and decency. You ask me the ones who hate this place the very most. Opposition in the House and Senate, oh yeah, for sure. See, they represent just a small, tiny minor fraction. I got much more in common with majority of inhabitants. Working people, poor people, frequently oppressed. The ones who know the steady stream of lies in the press. The ones who scared to death of the servers and protectors. Had enough and now got no fear left to render. Tired of the law being one with the criminals. American dreaming, just escaping to the fiction. American nightmare, someone wake me up from. Someone save our lives, someone please, please come along. Someone please take notice, someone have no fear. But that someone is us, there's no saviors around here. American nightmare, someone wake me up from. Someone save our lives, someone please, please come along. Someone please take notice, someone have no fear. But that someone is us, there's no saviors around here.
In America, black people are treated very much as the Vietnamese people or any other colonized people, because we're used, we're brutalized. The police in our community occupy our area, our community, as a foreign troop occupies territory. And the police are there not to, in our community, not to promote our welfare or for our security and our safety, but they're there to contain us, to brutalize us and murder us, because they have their orders to do so. And just as the soldiers in Vietnam have their orders to destroy the Vietnamese people.
Largest prison population ever to exist. That's a great tagline for a democratic outfit. Land of the chain gang, land of the slaves. There's literal meaning there, no need to exaggerate. Private everything, thousands of different kinds of law enforcement agencies that all keep a close eye attached to the dissidents. Sure to swell in numbers, call this a police state. Actually, to understand, they claim that the Stasi, KGB had that lock, but the NSA far surpassed them. Did they not? This ain't just American question of humanity. They doing this to us. Imagine what they doing overseas. Official DC doctrine. Now endless war from the South Bronx to Compton. Well, it's being offshore. I can only think of one thing that's gonna stop them, and I say it like a broken record every single album.
We haven't benefited from America's democracy. We've only suffered from America's hypocrisy. And the generation that's coming up now can see it and are not afraid to say it. If you go to jail, for what? If you're black, you were born in jail.
American nightmare, someone wake me up from. Someone save our lives, someone please, please come along. Someone please take notice, someone have no fear. But that someone is us, there's no saviors around here. American nightmare, someone wake me up from. Someone save our lives, someone please, please come along. Someone please take notice, someone have no fear. But that someone is us, there's no saviors around here.
All right, we're back, and I'm speaking with Abby Martin, and she's the founder of Media Roots, which leads me to the next subject that I wanted to touch on a little bit, and that is, you know, you've talked very passionately about the principles of citizen journalism, and it's something that I also feel very, very strongly about, especially working here at KCSB, which is one of the few community radio stations still in operation, an independent student radio station and community radio station. So, you know, we treasure these kinds of little oases of information that we can get out there, you know, especially when we're dealing with mainstream media and Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, and I mean, just the constant deluge of hatred and strife and misinformation. I mean, and lies, outright lies. I was reading an article that said that Fox News is reported to tell the truth, to actually report the facts, like 20% of the time. I mean, some ridiculous...
That's surprising that they even do it that much.
Yeah, exactly. That was a lot of people's reaction. Oh, it's 20%? Okay, that's surprising. We thought it was 100, you know. But I mean, that's sad. I mean, that, you know, and so many people really look to Fox News as being the source of information when it's just complete propaganda and scary rhetoric, you know, scary hate rhetoric. But so, yeah, what do you see as being kind of the principles of citizen journalism? I mean, when you started Media Roots, what was your objective long term?
I think going off of what you said really quickly, 50% of Americans still get their news from the MSM, which is the mainstream media. So you have Fox, CNN, you know, MSNBC. Fox and MSNBC obviously exist to promote a party. CNN pretends like it's this like arbitrator between the two. Total ridiculousness. I mean, one has to look no further than their 17 weeks straight of plane coverage of the missing Malaysian airliner to see, you know, what CNN is all about. So my objective, I think that citizen journalism needs to embody what that word is, citizen-based, grassroots, bottom-up. If you do get funding somehow, and this is what I actually tried to do on RT, even though it was funded by the Russian government, I made it very clear that I was never going to do a pro-Russian story, that I was never, you know, of course there are issues of self-censorship, as there is like with any sort of news entity that has questionable funding from the top. Mm-hmm. But I spoke out multiple times against Russia and tried to make very clear that I had a very strong journalistic integrity, and I would stay true to my moral compass if I felt like Russia was doing something that I needed to vocalize something against.
Right.
But I think that it's very tough, and usually you will get fired right out the gate. RT was kind of a special platform where I was able to carve this freedom into it. But, I mean, look no further than, like, Richard Engel on NBC. Just to give you one example, I mean, there's dozens. Mm-hmm. You could look at Phil Donahue getting fired for criticizing the Iraq war, and he wasn't even on a state-funded media apparatus. He was just on corporate media. So that's scary to me. Mm-hmm. Then you look at Richard Engel from NBC, one of their top foreign war correspondents, who got, quote-unquote, kidnapped by Assad forces, you know, peddled this whole narrative. Of course, the U.S. has been itching to go to war, like bomb Assad, oust Assad. You know, as we know, Obama was all set to bomb Syria about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to a couple weeks ago, where Richard Engel basically and NBC had to admit that they lied for the State Department when he was really kidnapped by FSA fighters instead of Assad forces. And they actually covered up the information, lied on behalf of the U.S. government. Now, if that doesn't chill you to the bone about the state of our media, and we are talking about a war where people are dying every day there, this is not a joke. This is a life and death situation. Babies are dying. You're going to tell me that NBC is going to manufacture a lie purposefully to protect the government, to promote war. You know, during the Iraq war lead up, they were basically, it was like the most abysmal fail of journalism ever, where they just basically became stenographers and were reprinting government press releases. But this shows you that it goes beyond just reprinting government press releases and not questioning. Mm-hmm. It goes well beyond that, where there's narratives being shaped and protected and fostered for the establishment. So when you look at that state of journalism and the decline, I think people get it. The youth obviously understands. That's why we have this renaissance of citizen journalism. People are taking it upon themselves to write blogs, podcasts, go out there, be reporters. The Baltimore stuff, if we didn't have live streamers out there and citizen journalists on Twitter, all we'd have is the corporate media telling us that these people are animals and thugs and poor cops.
Right. Yeah.
So this is how we are changing the narrative. The winners used to write the history. Well, not anymore.
Right.
Because history is going to be told real time, live streamed, and we're going to be there to hear it.
Yeah.
And we're going to be the victors. And even if they try to hijack it from us, we know the truth, and we're watching. And the whole world is watching. And they can't take that away from us anymore. We stepped up to the plate. We forced their hand in net neutrality to no help to Obama, who tried to appoint a frickin' telecom lobbyist to head the FCC. We stepped up. We got that done. We can do more. Mm-hmm. And it just takes the willpower. And we're winning the information war because let's be clear, we are in an information war.
Yeah. That's where I'm at, too. I mean, to me, it's this is all, you know, people talk about revolution. I'm believe me, I'm there. But the real revolution is what happens in our minds. And
exactly.
That's because we need the information, the information that nurtures our minds so that we can make the correct choices. If we're given lies and disinformation, then we can't make correct, proper choices about stuff, about our government, about our lives, or about anything. So the information is critical. If we don't have the good information, then we can't nurture our minds. So, the revolution will not be televised, but it will be tweeted, live streamed, podcast, and shared on social media.
Exactly. This is about a consciousness awakening.
It
and
is.
The revolution does have to start with us, because if we, and I, like, people are always get very defeated, very disillusioned, rightly so, because everything's so messed up. But you have to understand that if we can focus on just getting the knowledge out there and getting an informed citizenry, then we can figure out what we can do with it. Because right now, of course nothing can happen if no one knows what's happening.
Right. Yeah,
like
that's
it. The number one step.
Right, yeah. It's like it's total confusion. I mean, which and that's actually a strategy. They say out of chaos, order. I think that's a CIA logo or something like that. But it's basically perception management. And that is, if you can control people's ability to understand a situation, really complex international situations, if you can boil it down to simple sound bites or whatever, then you really control people's minds. I mean, Malcolm X talks about that, too. I mean, the media is the most powerful thing. It controls people's minds.
Exactly. And there's this paradoxical foreign policy and paradoxical injection of talking points that are very confusing to people, where they just want to say, I give up, I don't get it. Why are we bombing, you know, why do we want to oust Assad, but we're helping him by bombing ISIS? Why do we want to bomb ISIS, but we're funding these rebels? Like, nothing makes sense.
Right.
You know, and all this rhetoric doesn't make sense. And people get that deep down something's very intrinsically wrong.
Right. Yeah, I really feel like the confusion now is deliberate. I mean, you know, people don't even, you know, when you create a situation, it's like, for me, it's like, if you're going to rob a bank, the best way to rob the bank is to blow up the corner store down the street. I mean, you would create some kind of diversion, right? You're going to create some kind of diversion that's going to, everybody's going to have to run and deal with that emergency situation while you go in and you rob the bank. So, and essentially that's what Wall Street has done to the American people. I mean, you know, they've robbed the bank. They've, you know, we've had this massive depression ever since 2008, 2007. And now we've got diversions all over the place, just constant chaos and disorder and the breakdown of the system as people just scramble to try to save their own lives. So,
right, absolutely.
I don't know. I see it as kind of like there's a method to the madness, I think.
I totally agree with you.
So, yeah, the new media system that you were talking about, the principles of citizen journalism, what are some other advantages? Well, I mean, like, I definitely see a dichotomy between old media and new media, although the old media now increasingly is taking over the new media, which is, you know, things like the Internet and all the benefits now that we have of telecommunications and stuff. But did you have anything that you wanted to say in terms of where you see things going and with regard to,
I think that when people are pleading for the mainstream media to pay attention, they never will. It's a complete exercise in futility. We have to create our own mediums of exchange and access and sharing.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to. We have to make this structure obsolete. I mean, they are dying. They're totally irrelevant to anyone below basically 40, I think, at this point. You know, and I think that that's where our hope lies, is knowing that people are very wise to the misinformation and disinformation, and they're totally, I mean, I think it's important to see it, because then you'll kind of see, like, how the establishment wants you to think of issues, but understand what you're watching, and then counter it to your own research and get a variety of different sources online. And I always tell people, don't just listen to me, check it for yourself. Go online, get 5-10 different sources, then formulate your opinion on it.
Right.
I don't claim to be unbiased. I think that neutrality is dead. I think that I would much rather know someone's bias right out the gate. I do not hide it. I'm totally unabashed with my opinions. And I think that I would rather know than kind of tiptoe around, like, what is this journalist trying to say?
Right.
They're trying to give too much of a voice to this, like, government talking points. Like, for example, all these news coverages of Baltimore, and all these corporate media outlets are just talking to police. And it's like, I'm sorry, are you there to get the police's opinion or the protesters who are on the streets? I mean, you know, and then you start to just realize that, but I really do think that just the creation of new media content, and it's happening, it's happening around the world, and we are all united on that front, and we are going to drive this dinosaur media structure into irrelevancy.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, when I started studying a little bit about the Arab Spring and its relationship to the Occupy movement and the movements that have been kind of going on ever since around the world, it just seems that... And for example, in Egypt, if they had not had live stream capabilities, if they and the Egyptian government actually tried to shut down their internet access, but other people internationally came in and helped them out, and then they were able to podcast, live stream, and tweet basically what they were doing in Egypt when they were fighting the corrupt Egyptian government at that time. And it was all because of social media. I mean, it was really that Arab uprising in Egypt was really to the credit of social media.
Amazing. So,
yeah.
And these tools, you know.
And then Iceland.
These tools we just have to take advantage of these tools that we have.
Right. And then the Iceland revolution, the same thing. When Iceland was finally able to kick out the bankers and arrest some of the bankers and the corruption in their government, they reconstituted their constitution using Facebook. So they used Facebook and social media to have all Icelandic people participate in creating a new Icelandic constitution. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah. It's some really powerful stuff is happening, and people I don't even think really know all the stuff that's happening with social media and the internet now and the capabilities of it. So we're coming down to the end of our show here, and I was hoping, I still wanted to talk a little bit about your art. I mean, you're a fantastic artist.
Thank you.
I saw some of your stuff at Leo's Lab just recently in Ventura.
Thank you so much. Yeah, art is a catharsis for me. I started just doing abstract art just to get away from my political domination of life, where I just felt like I needed some sort, because I can't meditate. I have really bad ADD and OCD, so I had to almost find something where I can still do something but shut my brain off.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand.
So it evolved, and it became this beautiful thing where I was able to integrate, you know, nature and a lot of other things that I'm passionate about and kind of depict that in these beautiful photos and take images from around the world and try to make different, imagery out of them that can provoke some sort of emotional response, either bad or good.
Yeah.
And so it's just been a really great journey and awesome to have that as a counterpart to my political activism.
Yeah, I really noticed the colors. I love you just had the really rich colors that you managed to interweave in different ways that just really made the pictures and the art so luscious.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming out to the show.
Yeah, no, it was great. I'm really, really glad I went. Where can listeners go to find out more about your career and your activities and media and citizen journalism, media roots? Is there some place that you can direct?
Yeah, so we since we are a hub of citizen journalists and we always accept submissions. So if anyone wants to do their own citizen journalism and have a place to publish, we'd be more than happy to get your submissions. Just send it to our editor at info@mediaroots.org. Go to mediaroots.org just to check out our website, the archive that I was talking about that we're operating on right now. You can check out the archive of Breaking the Set on YouTube, which is the 500 and something shows that I did. That's all going to be saved there. And then also my art at abbymartin.org.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Okay. So I'm gonna definitely join your organization.
Yay!
Radio Occupy. We'll be joining soon. So, well, great. I'm so glad that we had this opportunity to talk today. It was really very informative, very interesting discussion. And I really hope we can do it again soon.
Hey, thank you so much for all of your passion and work. And thanks for letting me be a part of it. It was really great.
Es cosa de locos, pocos tienen todo. forma el lío y nosotros a pagar. Antes que sea tarde, tendrán que hacer caso, que si se arruina el cimiento, la torta viene abajo. Oye mi voz, oye mi voz, ese grito
Time's now 7 p.m.